If I could have all the legislators take their seats, please. Thank you. Good evening, everybody. Of the Ulster County Legislature to order. If we could please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance and for a moment of silence in observance of those who have lost their lives too soon due to suicide. It's with gratitude and humility that I acknowledge that we are gathering on the ancestral homelands of the Mohican, Munsee Lenape, and Scaticoke people, who are the indigenous peoples of Ulster County. To learn more about these tribes, past and present, please visit links available through our QR code. In addition to Mental Health Awareness Month, I'd also like to take a moment to recognize Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month, which also takes place in May. AAPI Heritage Month honors the contributions and achievements of Asian Americans, Native Hawaiians, and Pacific Islanders in the United States. It's a time to recognize their rich cultural heritage and the vital role they play in shaping the nation's history and future. To learn more about supporting and celebrating our local AAPI community, please visit links available through our session QR code. I call on Clerk Favela to read the announcements and call the roll.
Announcements, fire evacuation plan. Please note that in the event of an emergency, the fire department has requested that legislators and all others move at least one block away from the county office building in order not to impede the firefighters in their duties. Cell phones, please silence cell phones for the duration of session and the public hearings. Microphones, please be reminded to use your microphones when speaking so that you are recorded for the official record. Roll call. Clinton.
Here.
Collins.
Here.
Corcoran.
Here.
Criswell.
Here.
Donaldson.
Here.
Gavaris.
Present.
Green.
Here.
Hansett.
Here.
Harmon.
Here.
Hewitt.
Here.
Kitchen. Kovacs.
Here.
Levine.
Here.
Litz.
Here.
Lopez.
Here.
Maloney.
Here.
McCullough.
Here.
Nolan.
Here.
Roberts.
I am here.
Sperry.
Here.
Stewart.
Here.
Uchitel.
Here.
And Walls.
Here.
There are 22 present and one absent.
Thank you. Tonight we have two public hearings. Clerk Favela, can you read the first public hearing?
Tonight's first public hearing is on the tentative budget of the Ulster County Community College for the year 2024-2025.
Thank you. I invite SUNY Ulster President Allison Buckley, Vice President for Administrative Services CJ Rio, Board of Trustees President Debbie Briggs, Chief of Staff Jen Zell, and graduating student, congratulations, Ivy Cabrera, to give a brief presentation on the budget, and then we will open the floor to public comment. Thank you, Dr. Buckley, for being here tonight.
Oh, thank you, Chair Criswell, and thank you all for inviting me to speak today. I'm thrilled to be, as the chair shared, joined by the chair of our Board of Trustees and one of our outstanding students who I'll invite up here at the end of my remarks. But as someone who is a still relatively new college president, I wanted to start by thanking you all for your support of SUNY Ulster. I know how lucky I am to live in a county with a legislature that so values education and especially your community college. I was on a call with some other presidents today, and I am reminded how very, very fortunate we are. So I am here before you today to talk about the budget timeline, just as a refresher on where we are in the schedule. The college community works on the budget from December till March. In April, the Board of Trustees approved our tentative budget. We come to you in May and June. Our plan then would be to have the final budget sent to the SUNY System Office in July, with hopefully the Board of Trustees of SUNY approving our budget before the fiscal year starts on September 1st. Our budget this year is built on a conservative enrollment projection. We're projecting modest growth, but our enrollment team is very focused on a 10% goal to increase enrollment. So in the materials we've shared, that's, and I'm going to use the number 1,547 FTE, full-time equivalent. That is how the state budget works, and it's a ratio of the credit hours our students take. But to give you some idea of the people behind that 1,547 FTE, that's over 6,000 students that we serve every year, and that your support really makes a difference to help us do that better. 80% of the college budget is expenses that are tied to personnel, and so not expenses we have a great deal of control over. We have contractual increases. We have definitely seen in recent years expenses have gone up, whether it is insurance or heating oil. We are working very hard to mitigate those expenses. The college has great support from the Ulster Community College Foundation, which, for example, has provided funds to help us with technology and things along those lines. Just one last refresher, New York State funding. For next year, they will be what is called the floor funding model. So our state aid will be flat again next year. The ratio of a third from the state, a third from the county, and a third from tuition revenue does not really line up that way. You may have heard that the state legislature approved increases in direct operating aid, but that is only for the state-operated universities. There is no increase in aid for community colleges. Our revenue projections include a $100 increase in tuition per semester for our full-time students and $10 per credit for our part-time students. So next year, that would be about $2,740 per semester for a full-time student, which is well below the federal Pell Grant of $7,395. The meat and potatoes of my presentation today is that the college is respectfully asking for an increase in county support. And last year, we were very appreciative of a significant increase of about 7%. This year, we are asking for a 3% increase on the county support, which would be an additional $207,000 for the next fiscal year. Our total budget is just under $26 million. I do want to share that as of right now, we are projecting that we would be making a draw from the fund balance next year of about $774,000. We will continue to do our best in some revenue reduction as we can, and while simultaneously investing in growth and enrollment growth for the college. And with that, I would like to invite Chair Briggs to the podium for a few words.
Thank you, Dr. Buckley, Chair Criswell, and the Ulster County legislators. Thank you for having me back. I was here last year. SUNY Ulster continues to educate our students to stay and to work in Ulster County. Our faculty and our staff are responsible for preparing students for jobs with a family-sustaining wage, requiring us to work together to meet the workforce demands of the county. Since her arrival as SUNY Ulster president, Dr. Buckley has touted that a thriving community college serves as an economic engine, contributing to the vitality of our community, and that SUNY Ulster's student success equals Ulster County success. In 2021-2022, SUNY Ulster's total annual impact was $96 million in added income to the Ulster County economy. Expressed in terms of jobs, our impact supported 1,222 jobs. Our alumni contributed $74 million, and the class of 2022 will earn $47.5 million more over their entire career because of SUNY Ulster. SUNY Ulster is a fundamental contributor to ensuring the upward mobility of our residents. This year, as we celebrate our 60th anniversary of the college, we're meeting our mission of educating the individual and elevating the community. Thank you for the work that each of you does every single day, and for the continued investment in public higher education in Ulster County by both you, the county executive, and all of us, thus ensuring the success of our students, who are the future county leaders, by supporting the college and by supporting our county residents. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Briggs. And I would like to invite up one of SUNY Ulster's soon-to-be alums come Saturday. So Ivy Cabrera is going to come up and join us, too. Thanks, Ivy.
Good evening. My name is Evalise Cabrera, and I'm graduating from SUNY Ulster this May. I studied business administration at SUNY Ulster, and I look forward to transferring to SUNY New Paltz in the fall. As an open access institution, SUNY Ulster welcomes our diverse student body, and our students face many situations in life with many overcoming obstacles to meet their educational goals, such as student clubs and activities, along with programming and athletics, and serving the larger Ulster County business community through internships are all part of our SUNY Ulster student experience. I was very fortunate enough to work on campus as a student aide in the Human Resource Department. With that being said, they all have wonderful staff to work with, and I've learned a lot from them. As going to college, especially being first generation and coming from a low-income family, it has been, you know, comes very difficult, you know, for us to overcome and to better help us succeed in our life. However, that is not the case at SUNY Ulster. Between financial aid and the college foundation that has budgets over $1 million annually in scholarships, students can really access the quality of a higher educational with making their degree completion a reality and a dream come true. I enjoyed my time at SUNY Ulster and appreciate the support I received from faculty, staff, and our amazing president, Buckley. I am proud to have started at SUNY Ulster, and I look forward to the future. Thank you for your continued support of SUNY Ulster students.
Thank you. It's so wonderful to hear from students, and congratulations again. Clerk Fabella, do we have anyone signed up to speak on the first public hearing?
There is no one signed up.
Is there anybody here tonight who would like to speak on the SUNY Ulster budget? Anybody who would like
Mr.
to speak?
Mr. Chair, I'll make a motion to close the public hearing.
And do I have a second? All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you very much. And thank you again, Dr. Buckley, and everybody. Thank you. Clerk Fabella, can you please call the second public hearing?
Ooh, that timing is perfect. Our second public hearing tonight is on proposed Local Law Number 4 of 2024, Local Law amending Article 2 of the Administrative Code of the County of Ulster in relation to certain employment restrictions. There are no people signed up.
I was just going to ask that. Thank you. Is there anybody here who would like to speak on this public hearing? Anybody here who would like to speak on this public hearing?
Mr. Chairman, I'll make a motion to close the public hearing.
And do I have a second? McCullough, thank you very much. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Can I have a... I'm going to announce birthdays.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's always a fun thing. So so there are three birthdays for this month, and I'd like to recognize Legislator Manajo Green, her birthday on May 2nd, and Legislator Eric Stewart for May 5th, and Majority Leader Uchitel, May 6th. Congratulations. Happy birthday. Yes, everybody's sitting in a row there. could I get a motion to dispense with the reading of the previous meeting minutes?
Dispense with the meeting reading of the minutes.
And do you have any? Yes, thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. There are various communications listed and on file in the clerk's office that remain available for inspection by those interested. You just need to contact the office of the clerk. Now it's a privilege to grant privilege of the floor to Tara McDonald, Ulster County Commissioner of Mental Health, to update us on mental health resources in the county. Accompanying Commissioner McDonald is Chanel Carney and Amy Hart from the Mental Health Association in Ulster County, David Wallace, CEO of LaSalle School, and Beth Alter, Director of Ulster County Mobile Mental Team at Access Supports for Living, to highlight their various mental health services. Thank you so much for being here tonight.
Absolutely. Would you like them to come up with me now or just call them up?
Just call them up.
Okay.
You don't have to all stand here.
Good evening. My name is Tara McDonald, and I am the Commissioner of the Department of Mental Health in Ulster County. I was told that I have 3-4 minutes tops. I'm not used to abbreviating myself, so I have notes, and I will be moving rather quickly. So I thank you to Chair Criswell and the entire legislative body for this invitation to speak about mental health services in the county in honor of Mental Health Awareness Month. So much is happening with our local and statewide behavioral health system, but I wanted to take my allotted 3 minutes to focus on just a few areas. Currently, the majority of our functions as a department are related to our administrative responsibilities dictated by mental hygiene law. However, a goal our department has for the recent years was to we strive to be more closely connected to the lives of residents as they attempt to navigate the behavioral health system, which is not easy. Over the past 4 years, we've created opportunities for our staff to increase our community-facing activities. The department's community engagement specialist, Jillian Nadiak-Bruck, is our most visible DMH staff member in the community. Jillian leads our opioid strategic action team efforts, and on any given day, including the weekends, you'll find Jillian in the community spreading prevention resources and education to all corners of our county. In late 2023, DMH onboarded Jacob Carter to act in the capacity of a jail reentry coordinator for Ulster County Jail. Jake is utilizing an evidence-based model that has proven efficacy when working with individuals at a critical time of transition like leaving jail. Jody Cordray is going into her second year as the court liaison for DMH. Jody is available to any court in the county that has individuals that are both challenged by mental health issues and is in the court criminal justice system. Through Resolution 77, this body challenged DMH to explore the question of what behavioral services should the department be contracting for and what services should we be delivering. This question should be answered through the process of a behavioral health needs assessment. We released an RFP to seek a partner in this endeavor. We awarded funding to Human Services Research Institute to engage our community using their expertise and guiding us through this assessment process. Contracting for this process is underway, and the assessment is scheduled to begin late summer of 2024. At the conclusion of the project, the goal is to have enough information about the gaps and opportunities in our system to accurately answer the question of contracting versus delivering. Lastly, a very concrete way of achieving a closer connection to our residents was moving the department's offices to the heart of Midtown Kingston at 368 Broadway. The move has given us a bird's eye view of the early renovation of the first floor of 368. It will be a privilege for us to observe the renovation of the space into a crisis stabilization center. We're on track for a fall 2024 opening. At this time, I would like to introduce three critical stakeholders in our community. MHA in Ulster provides a vast array of clinical and residential programs. Thanks, Chanel.
Hello, good evening. So I'm Chanel Carney. I'm Senior Director at MHA in Ulster County, and this is...
I'm Amy Hart. I'm the Director of the Health Home Care Management Program and CORE for Mental Health Association.
So you guys should all have, I gave some handouts on some of our programs, so I'm just going to highlight quickly. We have a ton of programs. Right now we have four residential programs. We have a location on Locust Street, Titan Bridge Road. We have 12 beds on Elmendorf, and then we have what is called scattered supported, which is throughout the county. So we provide support to residents, our clients, in developing sober living skills, daily living skills, really learning to live independently. All of our clients have a mental health diagnosis and or a substance use diagnosis. We also have the Assertive Community Treatment Program, which is really the highest level of care, one of the highest level of care management and therapeutic programs in the county. And those clients we serve are those who have not been successful in traditional care management services or therapeutic services. So we have, our census for that is 68. We are almost full. It's a revolving door because there's just so many residents in Ulster County that suffer from mental illness. We have care management services, which Amy's going to jump in on. And then we also have our wellness services, which is very vast. So on a lot of the forms I gave you are about our wellness services. We provide support groups free to the community. We have meals that are open to anyone who wants to walk into our building, which is right down the hill on Aaron Court, right by Hannaford. So our meals, we provide breakfast for $1. Lunch for $2, and then we have a supper club meal every Tuesday. The meals, we have a chef. He's great. The meals are fantastic. So those are provided to anyone. We also have a drop-in center, so anyone coming in who just needs a place to hang out for the day, they can come in, watch TV. They can participate in all the different groups we have. We have a meditation room. We have an art room. We do art classes. We have a library. We have computer room. We do computer classes. And it's really great, and we welcome anyone to come in and take a tour. With that, we also have a bunch of different programs. We have, and they're all listed on here, but we have youth respite. We have our RAW program, which works with OPWDD, and it's a respite program. We have our ACEs program, which works with SUNY and other students in the area to help them be successful in school. We have youth respite. We have comp peer, so we match up someone who would like to be a peer to a client and do activities with them. Our support groups. And we also run the county wellness recovery website, which everyone should have a card. And that is where you can find out everything that's going on here in Ulster County that has to do with mental health and substance use. So I'm just going to give it to Amy so she can talk a little bit about our care management services. And then,
yeah. Listening to all that, I can imagine how you guys are like, what is she talking about? There's so many things. And it's true that MHA is a very intensive, dynamic, diverse agency that provides everything. If you are thinking of someone who might need a service, MHA probably can meet that need. So call us no matter what. It can be overwhelming with all of the acronyms we use in mental health. It's a little much, but I'm the director of the Health Home Program, which was formulated about 10 years ago when Medicaid dollars were being looked at of who's using the most money. And it was folks with serious mental illness, chronic medical conditions, and substance use disorder, or a combination of them. So the Health Home Program provides care management to those folks in Ulster County, adults and children. We have one care manager that serves kids, and she's booked all the time. I'm looking forward to building that program more because there's lots of kids suffering from the last couple of years. But anyway, the care managers work with adults and kids in the community. They go to people's homes, they meet in libraries, they meet in our office, and help folks with whatever it is that they want to accomplish. And those needs used to be pretty simple. How do I get to a psychiatrist? How am I going to afford my pharmacy bill? And now those issues are, I'm homeless, and I can't live anywhere. So it's very, very crisis-oriented kind of work now, people being admitted to the hospital more often. So it's a very intensive program. There's also a core program that we're building that's providing life skills groups for similar folks, and that will be providing employment support, working with different businesses in the county to encourage them to employ our folks. There's financial support offered to them, and then the support of having this person helping the client figure out what they're going to wear, how they're going to present for their interview, et cetera, et cetera, and other life skills, doing laundry. Lots of folks just don't know how to do that. So that core program is going to address those life skills in a group setting. Did I forget anything?
No. I mean, we could go on and on, but yeah, with our short time. But take a look at the flyers, check out our website, and just know that the work that we all do is really, really hard and needed in this community. Thank you.
Thank you, Chanel and Amy. Next, I'm going to ask David from the LaSalle School, which is the operator of our popular mental health in schools program in the county.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, everyone, for having us this evening. It's a pleasure to be here. My name is David Wallace. I'm the executive director of LaSalle School. I ran out of the office this afternoon and didn't bring any fun materials for you, but there's a QR code on the slide, and you're welcome to come to our website. For those of you that are not aware of our services, we're based in Albany. We've been on our campus for 170 years providing residential foster care, special education, and other therapeutic services. I had the privilege of meeting Commissioner McDonald in her former role when she was with OMH, and she was one of the instrumental figures that we worked with at the state to stand up our behavioral health clinic, which is the only integrated children's OMH mental health and OASIS substance abuse clinic that serves children and families in the Capital District. On any given day, that program serves about 100 children ages 5 to 25 in the greater Albany region. And I'm really thrilled to say that about a year and a half ago, we had an opportunity to expand our reach, come down into your neighborhood, and start serving kids and families down here, bring our skills from Albany into the Ulster County region. And so in our school-based program, we have 10 staff, that's half social workers, half case managers, working with pairs of schools in each of your nine districts, 10 schools throughout the nine districts, the middle schools in particular, providing an array of services to those kids and families. One of the things I'm really most excited about, and I didn't share already, that my background is in social work. I'm trained as a clinician, and so I think about services for kids and families and communities from a clinical and therapeutic lens. One of the most exciting things about the project from my perspective and our team's perspective is the real forward thinking that you and the commissioner shared in really trying to remove as many barriers and obstacles that face children and families to access mental health and preventive services. And so I want to thank you for the opportunity to serve. And because we've been given this opportunity, I think we've, I hope you believe that we've brought some nimble and flexible services, that I think the original plan was to serve all of these kids in a co-located school setting. But I think we quickly realized that kids and families wanted us to meet them where they were at, which doesn't always mean the school. It means the home. It means the community. It maybe means a diner or the library. And I think as a result of that flexible thinking from all of you, from the commissioner, from her team, and from our staff, we've gotten a lot of positive feedback from our school partners, from our staff, from our families, and we've been seeing some great success. And so the program, as you know, is designed to serve 100 children and their families across those 9 districts. Today our enrollment is 88. We've got some modest wait lists in some of the school districts. Different districts are using the program in different ways because we don't have to necessarily worry about having the right diagnosis or the right insurance or the right treatment plan in place. We can just meet kids and families where they're at, and schools can determine what their needs are, and families can determine what their needs are. And so some of your schools are using this for restorative justice approaches, in other words, healing the harm of some sort of problematic or delinquent behavior they might have engaged in. Some are using it as an alternative to suspension. Some are using it for traditional mental health interventions and a variety of other purposes. So again, I want to thank you for the opportunity. It's been a really wonderful partnership. I look forward to many, many years of continuing to work together. Appreciate your time tonight.
Thank you, David. Last, I'd like to ask Beth from Access Supports for Living that operates the mobile mental health team. This is a fundamental service that we offer that goes all throughout the county. So thank you for coming, Beth.
Yep. So I'm Beth Alter. I have the privilege of representing Access Supports for Living tonight. I want to thank you for having us here. So thank you very much. So our services touch every other service that we've talked about and every service that's offered throughout the county. We'll go to social services, to school districts, to people's homes. We'll meet at McDonald's. We'll meet in the parking lot of Walmart. And we touch every corner of the county and the services that we provide. And so we hear a lot in the news and in media about access to care. We're the access to care. We're the open door. It doesn't matter whether you have insurance. It doesn't matter whether you have the best insurance or no insurance. Our access to care is you have a crisis, we come to you. We'll meet you where you're at, and we'll help problem solve and mitigate that crisis. Sometimes it means going to the local hospital. Oftentimes it means us problem solving at home with your loved ones, with your family, sometimes in businesses. So I think what is really different about us is that we're there to provide an access to care. The other service, I'll just say we have offices in Ellenville, in Kingston, and in New Paltz. We work very closely with law enforcement, and we do that for us to be safe and for us to also mentor with them. We have a lot of skill set that is helpful to them when they're providing services for any kind of mental health crisis, and they provide safety for us when we're out in the community facing unclear situations but wanting to be helpful to any family in need. In this county, Access also offers an urgent care center, and that urgent care center allows folks to walk in at Monday through Friday, 10 to 6, and be seen at that time. They have capacity so that somebody can get psychiatric services within 48 to 72 hours of walking in, which is kind of an urgent care model so that you get service on demand. Last week, the urgent care center saw 145 people. Year to date, they've seen 705 people. So the mobile team, every month, I've been around for a long time providing services, but in this capacity, I've been around for about 7 months. And it's amazing to me that each month that we look at statistics, the mobile team is seeing more and more folks. We follow up with everyone who's seen in the emergency room and not admitted for a mental health reason. We see everybody coming from any of our local Westchester Medical Center hospitals coming back into Ulster County. We follow up to make sure that we're the conduit to make sure they get to whatever aftercare appointment is set up for them. So we're looking for connectivity with folks to services, and we provide the walk-in services at the urgent care center. So again, we are an access to care, whether you're in an acute crisis or whether you have come to a point in your life where you know you need to seek services, you can do so by walking right in. And the urgent care center has a clinic attached to it so that you can transition from the urgent care into the ongoing clinical service. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Beth. Just wanting my last remarks to give some clarification, too, just in terms of if you're saying where is this urgent care that you speak of. It's at 368 Broadway. It is on the second floor. And as I mentioned, the department is on the fourth floor, and all of this represents the administrative responsibilities that I spoke to. Our department is responsible for making sure that these folks and us work together to serve you. And there are brochures out on the front that talk a little bit about how you get connected to the case management, how do you get connected to mental health in schools, and it gives you a little bit of orientation about our department. Plus, there's pens, if that. Again, thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much for sharing. We're going to do a quick group picture, so come on up, everybody. Okay, at this time we are going to move into a period of public comment regarding resolutions on the agenda. I want to remind everybody that you have 2 minutes to speak, and this period is on resolutions before the legislature this evening. We encourage you to speak, and we ask that everyone keep their comments respectful. There will be a time to speak on issues not before the legislature towards the end of the session. If you need reference to the agenda, we have a QR code available. Clerk Fabella, do we have anyone signed up for public comment?
There are 3 speakers signed up.
Thank you.
The first speaker signed up tonight is Michelle Hirsch.
Good evening. I'm Michelle Hirsch. I am a City of Kingston resident and alderperson for Ward 9 on Kingston's Common Council. Thank you to Chair Criswell, Majority Leader Uchitel, and Minority Leader Roberts for allowing me the opportunity to speak tonight. I'm here to speak about the resolution for establishing a policy to dedicate revenue generated from the collection of occupancy tax to housing and transportation initiatives. Last year, while on the City Council, I participated in the Affordable Housing Work Group that was put together by legislator Uchitel and former legislator Erner. The legislation to increase the bed tax was an initiative that came forth during that time that the work group was meeting. I'm disappointed to see that the resolution to allocate 25% of the bed tax to housing initiatives and 25% to transportation failed the Ways and Means Committee last week. This county needs more housing across all income levels. We need to create more low-income housing, affordable housing, and workforce housing. Families are languishing in shelters for over 3 years when the average stay used to be only 6 months long. We need to increase opportunities for first-time home buyers. Short-term rentals were a great economic driver for the area, but now we need to help drive that tax money toward repairing the damage that the short-term rental market created. We need to find the balance between tourism and keeping our community members from being displaced. We need to be expanding public transportation. Even in Kingston's Wilbur area, which I represent, the neighborhood is not on a bus route, and the state roads in and out of the area do not have sidewalks for safe passage. Not everyone owns a car, and if we increase low-income and affordable housing throughout the county, people will require that public transportation reaches them where they live. People in this county need busing on Sundays so they can visit with family or easily get to their houses of worship. The housing crisis and the expansion of public transportation is a bipartisan issue, and I ask that this resolution be considered so that the people of Ulster County can continue to thrive and prosper. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments.
The next speaker signed up is Kevin Smith.
Good evening. I'm Kevin Smith. I serve as chair of the County Trails Advisory Committee. I'm speaking today on Resolution 241, reestablishing the Ulster Delaware Advisory Committee. I want to thank you all. I want to thank especially Chair Criswell and Legislator Uchitel for sponsoring this resolution. It's clearly time to take back up the issue of the Ulster Delaware Corridor. A lot has happened since 2015. Some could argue that it's past time to take the issue up. But I think the 2015 policy was very prescient in identifying the need and the opportunity to really move forward with the implementation of some really great opportunities for the county, both for rail activities as well as for trail projects. And those have come to pass now. And we have this opportunity now and really increasingly the need to really look at some of the issues and make sure that all of the different perspectives that are available to the county are being brought to the table and that stakeholders are being brought to the table and given the opportunity to weigh in on what is really a legacy decision for the county. And make sure that the legislature as a whole is making the best, most informed choices that they can on the highest and best uses of the corridor. I have a couple, I'll just say one or two things here. In 2015, we didn't know that New York City Bike, if it were a standalone transit agency, would be the fifth or seventh largest transit agency in the United States. We didn't know that the Empire State Trail would be proposed and built and now be open for use in communities throughout New York State, including coming through our county and making use of our signature rail trail network running through some of our most important communities and connecting into our historic natural resource areas and cultural historical areas. So my time is up, but I thank you for passing this resolution tonight, and we look forward to participating in this process moving forward. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your comments.
The last speaker signed up is Craig Kelly.
Good evening. From Johns Hopkins Berman Institute on Bioethics, speaking on harm reduction, opponents sometimes argue that giving people sterile syringes, clean pipes, naloxone, etc., incentivizes drug use, but people are going to use drugs whether they have these resources or not, and so withholding them doesn't prevent that use, it just makes it more dangerous. Making an activity more dangerous doesn't stop people who are engaged in that activity, it just hurts and kills more of them. Again from Johns Hopkins, quoting Travis Reeder, PhD, MA. In my view, harm reduction and treatment, they can be the same thing because they make drugs safer and can prevent some of the negative consequences that define addiction. One can take the first steps of recovery while still using drugs fairly chaotically and continue their road to recovery through small, slow steps that reduce the harm of drug use. Resolution 207 states that it's necessary to issue an RFP to ensure those with substance abuse issues have, quote, immediate access to the most comprehensive, safe, and effective treatments available. The UCDMH Status of the System report issued in January of 2024 reported that not only did the number of fatal overdoses fall by 19%, but those reversed by naloxone rose 9%, many of them since the May 2023 approval of Somadi's contract. While I can't say all of this is attributable to Somadi's efforts, most certainly, at least some are, and that translates into lives saved, and that should matter to us all a lot. It seems clear that the goal of some is to completely sever any ties between the county and Somadi whatsoever. I understand that some have taken issue with their financial practices, and I understand that an ongoing audit is being conducted to address them. So when considering your vote here tonight, I ask that you consider the evidence and the lives of those who otherwise might still be with us and defeat this resolution. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your comments. Is there anybody else here who would like to speak? Yes, sir. Just ask that you would state your name for the record, please.
My name is Erwin Rosenthal. I live in Woodstock, New York. I want to thank the members of the legislature and Chairman Criswell for permission to speak this evening. I'm urging you to pass Resolution 241, which will reconstitute the Ulster and Delaware Corridor Advisory Committee. It will permit everyone to come to the table and have their say. The committee will decide if rail with trail can coexist together, as the CMRR believes, or whether a rail trail that excludes locomotives will prevail. I believe that the rail trail alternative, the one without trains, should be recommended. Here's why. A rail trail permits walking, biking, running, and bird watching for all ages. It permits the disabled to use it as well. Students can learn the history of our area from it, and all of this in a natural setting. And the closer a rail trail is to a community, the more likely it is that residents will use them and be more healthier for the exercise. The rail trails reduce automobile and truck traffic and congestion. They encourage local businesses, from diners to restaurants to motels and hotels and B&Bs, certainly to bike shops and even bookstores. And they provide a safe connection between communities, and not incidentally, they increase property values. And they have a record. The Great American Rail Trail stretches 3,700 miles from the state of Washington to Washington, D.C. It's 53% free at the moment. I'm sorry. I guess I can't go further.
If you could just wrap up, please, I'd appreciate
that. Okay, one quick thing. There was a wonderful article in the Kingston Wire, except it said this is a battle between native Ulsterites and New York urban expats. I was born in Ellenville in 1949. Maybe some of you remember Channel Master Corporation. We were the television antenna capital of the world. I've never lived in New York City, and I am speaking very much in favor of the rail trail. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, sir. Is there anybody else who would like to speak on issues, on resolutions that we have before the legislature? Anybody else? Anybody else? Thank you very much. We are now going to move into consent and non-consent agendas. Majority Leader, you should tell us, is there anything that's moving in or out of consent?
We have two resolutions we can move into consent, 212 and 260.
Minority Leader. Thank you. On the consent agenda.
I don't know if there's other, or if that's that. Okay. On the consent agenda, we're a short yes.
We are a short yes with one abstention, Legislator Litz, on Resolution 242 for the purposes of employment.
Thank you.
The Independent Democratic Republic Caucus is a short yes as well.
Thank you.
The resolutions are adopted 22-0 with the exception of Resolution 242, which is adopted 21-0 with one abstention, Legislator Litz.
Thank you. Could I just ask that the podium be moved? Thank you. Thank you. At the request of Legislator Kovacs, I'll be taking a couple of things out of order in non-consent for the purpose of procedural correctness. So we are now moving on to the non-consent agenda.
The first resolution.
Minority Leader Roberts.
I'm sorry, Clerk. Were you going to recognize me?
Oh, I don't get to do that. That's his
job. I recognize you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and kudos to you for bringing those fine folks from the mental health awareness here. Chairman McDonald has done a great job doing that, and in honor of that, I'd like to take 180 and bring it back, reconsider it this month. That is amending the 2024 budget to fund mental health initiative to secure services for a children's mental health clinic. And we'll be reconsidering this not to defeat it, but to postpone it.
Thank you. Is there a second on that? On that motion? Discussion? Legislator Maloney?
Your head is in a first.
Oh, I'm sorry. Minority Leader Roberts?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, once again. It's always a pleasure to address this body. We heard from your staff, the mental health staff and the guests, and we heard a lot about the service they provide. We heard about when the crisis stabilization program was started on 368 Broadway in the heart of Kingston. We heard from the MHA about 12 beds on Elmendorf. I don't have a map, but I think that's in Kingston. We've also heard about the $1 meals on Aaron Court, which I believe is also in Kingston. We've heard about the urgent care services and the counseling services, both in Kingston. We've also seen that there's lots of programs on Aaron Court where you could do your laundry, go shopping, go see a movie, and do Zumba, but there's nothing in the southern part of the county. My fault. We do have the mobile bus that comes around, which we much appreciate it, but all these services here and we get the van. We have to do better for the children of this county, including in Gardner and Marlboro and Highland, Lloyd, Plattekill. So that's why I brought this up to reconsider this resolution.
Legislator Maloney?
A question through the chair to Minority Leader. Is this was there a meeting with the executive branch of government about other concerns for this location recently, or am I mistaken about that?
Would you like to answer that?
Yes, we had a meeting last week. It was myself, the majority leader, legislators Hansent, legislator Gavaris, and a few other staff. And Vicky was there, of course.
Yes.
And
Legislator Maloney.
Question through the chair to the minority leader. Was there any agreements made? Was there some common ground as far as the concerns about other organizations that are housed there?
There didn't appear to be any concerns, only excuses and, maybe not excuses is the right word, but, reasons why it should go there.
Legislator Maloney for the third time.
Yep.
Is this?
I think the question didn't count towards my time, did it? Well, I need.
I don't know the answer to that, so I'm going to have to find out.
The questions count towards time.
I'm going to let it go. So.
Thank you, Chair.
For the first time.
So, look, my colleague and I have spoken out with concerns. We take a lot of heat for it. It's not easy to speak on certain things in this political culture these days, and anything that has to do with harm reduction or housing, it's very hard to be critical because you're painted as someone that's against harm reduction or against housing. And I just don't care about what people say about me. I believe it's right to bring these things up. I have real concerns. several years ago, we had a young girl come to the legislature and speak about her horrifying experiences next to this organization. We have an organization in this building that we cannot put children around. And as a heterosexual white male these days, I'm kind of told a lot that I don't need to talk about this or that. But as a father of four, I do think my opinion matters on children and kids. And there's a lot of parents around the country that are sick and tired of people telling us what's best for our kids or kids. And we should not be putting children in the same building as this organization that's there now. It has to be addressed. I've lost count of the number of whistleblowers. I've shared some of this information with some of my colleagues. Violence, sexual assault, drug dealing, drug use, overdoses, all being told not to be reported. Whistleblower intimidation. Just in 2022, $55,000 in missing cash. Missing cash. And the best excuse they can come up with is that they gave it to people in crisis. There's a ban at the jail. Can someone please tell me why this hangs at the jail? Somati Recovery is no longer allowed access inside the jail. Can somebody tell me why that's hanging there? We have issues. We have a wrongful death. A second employee there that had died of a drug overdose. They commingle all their money, and the money is flying around everywhere. And there's just too many reports of drug use and inappropriate behavior and violence of all types. And we just want to look the other way and put kids in a building with them. And too many people know it's wrong and are just scared to say it. I don't know why we're doubling and tripling down on putting children around this. It's not right. You wouldn't want your kids to be around it. I sure as hell don't want my kids to be around it. And it's just, there's too many red flags here. I have a colleague that didn't disclose that there's a financial relationship that we need to look into. Tell you what, if it was my financial relationship, we'd look into it. If it was Randall Everett's, we'd look into it. We'd make things up about it. There's just too much here. We have a track record with this organization. It needs to be investigated, and when it does, my colleague and I will be fully vindicated, as I've been a million other times on things I've come out and said, been brave enough to say when no one else wanted to say it. But this is wrong. It's wrong to put kids in this building around this organization with what we know. And shame on anybody that's willing to do that.
Legislator Collins for the first time.
So Resolution 180 does not specify any location. Resolution 180 specifies that there be an RFP for the mental health clinics for children and families. Delaying the passage of this resolution will only delay the construction and the building out of that service for mental health services or clinics for children and families. I understand the concern about having centralized services in Kingston. I understand that. It's a big county. But this resolution does not talk about where the locations are going to be. It talks about the services, and that RFP needs to happen. The longer we delay that RFP, the longer it is until we get those services. So I encourage this body to pass, to reject this referral back to committee. Thank you.
Legislator, you should tell for the first time, and then Maloney.
So I just wanted to mention, just because the comment was made about excuses being mentioned at a meeting, I didn't hear excuses at the meeting that I was at about safety in our, with our children mental services that the county is involved in. I heard a serious, consideration into the issue, a conversation about it, a discussion about security, a discussion about floor plans. These are exactly the conversations that we're supposed to be having. So I applaud everyone who is, asking these questions and listening to the answers and taking seriously what those answers are. We also implored, I appreciate those in the meeting who implored the county executives team to ask people who are, ask the families who have children that are bringing them to mental health services already in that building, some of which are services that we heard mentioned earlier tonight. And they did, and they brought us back that information tonight and shared that they've not gotten any complaints that would match what we've just heard described. And in fact, the only complaint that they're getting is that there's construction, and that construction is, you know, a temporary thing anyway. And so I just didn't want to let that comment go by without mentioning that the county executive's team has been taking very seriously concerns that we bring them and coming back with answers. And I appreciate that very much.
Thank you, Majority Leader. Legislator Maloney, for the
second
time.
So on one hand, we're being told maybe it's not even going to go there. And on the other hand, it's definitely going to go there and it's going to be fine. I've actually talked to members of our own county workforce that are doing the work there that complain about pot smoke inside, fecal matter in elevators, and plenty of things that make them uncomfortable, our own workers. But maybe I'm the only one that talks to the rank and file. It's not okay. There's too much out there. And just like all these other things I've talked about for years, and not one time have I not been proven right. And I believe that a true investigation at some point will have to take place, and I will be unfortunately proven right again about this organization. But time will tell, and once it happens, y'all just pretend it didn't happen anyways and try to move on.
Minority Leader Roberts.
Thank you again, Mr. Chair. We had that meeting on Thursday afternoon about 4 o'clock. Today is Tuesday. I don't know what kind of poll you could do with parents and actually probably 2 business days, maybe 3, in order to get a general feeling about how they feel about bringing their kids next to a Samadhi. I'll say it, Joe, if you don't. We've also heard asked questions about security, and we were told how secure the building is. And now we understand there's going to be 1 security guard in that building. We did put a resolution in last month to hire 5 part-time security agents. I guess they're going to cover some the crisis stabilization building in one between the 5 part-time officers. So I'm not satisfied with the answers I heard from the county executive. And to Legislator Collins' point, yeah, nothing says in the resolution where it's going to be located, but you don't need to see it on a piece of paper to hear the county executive, to hear the staff where it's going to go. We all know where it's going to go. We shouldn't be playing games with that information. So again, I'm just asking you to reconsider it so we can look around, have the time to find a location more suitable in the southern part of the county.
On the motion to refer this back to committee. Oh, I'm sorry. On the motion to reconsider.
Just as a point of order, this is the motion to reconsider. So an affirmative vote means that it's back on the floor to reconsider?
Correct.
Okay. So we've got a short no with 2 yeses, Clinton and Gabarrus.
Thank you.
Yes.
Talk amongst yourselves for a moment. We'll give the clerk a second here.
So the motion to reconsider would be defeated, 10 yeses to 12 noes.
Okay, moving on.
The first resolution in non-consent is Resolution 168, adopting proposed local law number 1 of 2022, a local law amending Article 3, Hotel and Motel Room Occupancy Tax of the Code of the County of Ulster in relation to determination of taxable rent.
Thank you. Legislator Nolan.
Thank you. I'd like to make a motion to send this resolution back to the Economic Development Committee.
Is there a second on that? Legislator Harmon, second that. On the motion? I see Legislator Maloney's hand.
I'm going to be a yes, but it's just disappointing watching how we treat these billion-dollar out-of-town developers, whether it's Tech City or Golden Hill, and what we do to our own longtime big employers. I just don't get it. I really don't get it. But we bend over backwards to the point where we don't even care if some of these organizations pay taxes, pay us what they owe us, We move heaven and earth for them without a lot of results. But then we have these multi-generational employers, and this is how we treat them.
On the motion?
On the move to refer to committee, we're a short yes with one no. Legislator Uchitel?
Short yes.
Thank you. And please note that Legislator Hewitt's not in the room.
The resolution is adopted 20-1. Right, he's not coming back anytime soon. Okay, we'll get his vote next time, if he chooses.
Thank you.
The next resolution. Oh.
Yes, Legislator Hewitt, would you like to weigh in your vote on?
No.
So this is the motion to refer 168.
Yes.
To the Economic Development Committee. Thank you.
The correct vote on the referral to Economic Development is 21-1. The next resolution in on consent is 207, establishing a policy to maximize and prioritize the procurement of safe, effective, and comprehensive outpatient and substance use disorder withdrawal and stabilization services in and for the County of Ulster.
Minority Leader Roberts.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This resolution actually allocates, begins a process to get the opioid settlement money back on the street where it belongs, not sitting in the county bank account. Right now, last year, we awarded the full amount, $700,000 and change, to Somati. In the 1 year ending 12/31, they did not spend it all. I believe there's about $450,000 left. The county comptroller has put a freeze on any payments to Somati, and I understand that it is going to take a court order to release that money. There's nothing Somati could prove or do that's going to satisfy the comptroller in order to do it. So we need to move on to the next phase of our treatment for people with drug addiction. So what this does, it starts the process all over again, and nothing in this resolution forbids Somati from putting in an application or putting in a bid to get this money back again.
Legislator Collins for the first time.
A couple issues with this. First of all, the existing contract with Somati is still in place. Was extended through the end of this year, legally extended through the end of this year. So taking the money away from Somati would involve probably a lawsuit to take the money away from Somati. Next, the comptroller is working with Somati to look at the 2023 audit once that gets prepared and gets done. Once that's satisfied and satisfies the comptroller, she will pay back, the fees that are owed to Somati, and things will move forward. So this is moving forward. If we need this to move forward quickly, we should let that process continue instead of going back to a 9-6 month process of trying to find a new vendor and also probably being sued by Somati for stealing the contract from them. Thank you.
We're going to get you a new microphone, Legislator Collins. Legislator Maloney for the first time.
Yeah, we've only seen the 2022 books. And as I've said before, can you imagine $55,000 in missing cash? What else were they spending money on? Were they taking trips, staying in hotels, going to fancy restaurants? You better believe it. When is enough enough with our hard-earned tax dollars? And the idea that they're saving lives, we need to spend this money to save lives. But the idea that, first of all, I don't necessarily believe that all $55,000 that is missing was just given away to people that are struggling to buy tents. I think a lot of the money was used, and what I'm hearing from whistleblowers was used to actually buy drugs. There's a young woman that tragically died there. friends and family are waiting for the wrongful death investigation. Where our sheriff is, I don't know. Does politics play into this? I fear maybe. And it's just very sad how many red flags, not even red flags, we have $55,000 in missing cash and money being spent inappropriately, money we gave them. We've got financial relationships with a sitting elected official that wasn't disclosed right away. We need to see more about that. That needs to be provided. Is there anything shady going on there? We don't know. And we still haven't even seen 2023. And meanwhile, we have all these other great organizations that are doing the work that don't have all these complaints, that don't have all these concerns, that don't have people working there that are dying. It's just unbelievable the amount of evidence that is out there, the amount of people everywhere I go, everybody I talk to, from law enforcement to meter maids to people that have gone there for recovery, from people that have worked there. Too many people know about what's going on with this organization, and for us to sit up here and pretend it's not real is beyond, I mean, I'm trying to be nice. Disappointing is not the word. It's just unbelievable. Unbelievable when you have people calling you and telling you the things that are going on there. We all see it. We all know it. And we just keep on going. And it's really hard to believe that somehow politics doesn't come into play. And we've gotten to a point where we just got to keep charging ahead. We can never stop and acknowledge maybe we made a mistake where we sent this money. Maybe we do have to put a pause on here. Maybe somebody does need to be held accountable. We just push right through for all the wrong reasons. And people are hurting, and people could be being helped with this money.
On the resolution.
On the resolution, we are a short no with one yes, Legislator Levine, and two recusals, Legislator Gavaris for purposes of employment and Legislator Nolan for a volunteer role.
Short yes.
Yes.
And that's a volunteer role with a financial involvement in the organization.
Point of order has not been called on.
Please hold your comments until I call on you. Thank you. Thank you. Moving on.
The next resolution and non-consent is 211, amending capital project number 677. Golden Hill Transportation Improvements, amending the 2024 Capital Fund Budget, Department of Planning.
On the resolution.
On the resolution, we're short yes.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, we're short yes, too.
Thank you. So we voted now, Legislator Maloney. I
didn't vote.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
First, real quick, 220, 241, 251, and 253, I had asked to be put into non-consent, and they weren't. So if we could pull those out and put them back into non-consent.
Let's check with Chris. I think we have to reconsider them. They were just adopted.
That's correct. I was told before the meeting they would be pulled.
Yeah, they would have to be reconsidered.
Let's finish on 211, and then let's figure out what this next piece is.
Okay.
All right. So on 211, we had the votes on both sides. Legislator Maloney.
I'm a no. Just of all the things, solar tax credits, we threw over to them. We took a lesser price. The jail demo, we weren't supposed to do. We did. Turns into a lottery. Anyways, this billion-dollar corporation is now going to meet us on this, on these pennies, 60-40, and they couldn't just come out and just do it, by the way. And I think that's just a sign of what's to come. They didn't, because if they did that, maybe we'd expect them to do more. I think this is blatantly them telling us, don't expect much, and we still have more need from you in the state. Nothing about this relationship with this billion-dollar firm from starting 5 or 6 years ago has been what it was said it was going to be, and now they're willing to do 60-40 on a piece of property they own, something that was supposed to be done and talked about 5 or 6 years ago as something they were going to do anyways, and here we are. And this is what we make our stand on, this little thing. Not on the $2 million demo, not on the asking price. This is where we make our stand. Very typical of us.
Thank you, Legislator Maloney. Your vote's been acknowledged. All right, so... We're going to hold those until the end of this non-consent agenda that we have in front of us, and then we will talk about those. Thank you, Legislator Maloney.
So the vote for Resolution 211 was 21 to 1. The next resolution in non-consent is 237, and that's adopting proposed local law number 3 of 2024, a local law amending Article 5 of the Ulster County Charter and amending Article 5 of the Administrative Code to modify various provisions in relation to the Commissioner of Health or Public Health Director and the Medical Examiner.
I want to recognize Legislator Kovacs for the first time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, Mr. Chairman, I want to thank you for taking 237 out of order. I appreciate that. I would also like to request a long roll on this vote.
Noted.
Thank you. This resolution is, at best, premature in that we have not, as of today's date, exhausted our search for a licensed physician to serve as our Commissioner of Health. I hesitate to amend the county charter when we are really just starting the process of interviewing applicants for this position. But let's back up. What is a health commissioner? A health commissioner is responsible for making critical decisions that affect the well-being of our communities. They oversee healthcare policy, respond to public health emergencies, and allocate resources to address pressing health issues. Who better to make these decisions than a trained and licensed physician? I remember quite vividly the year 2020 in the midst of the pandemic. There were Zoom meetings, which were broadcast on Spectrum News, featuring the three county executives for Ulster, Dutchess, and Orange, along with the three health commissioners for those counties, all licensed physicians. Having our health commissioners, who were also medical doctors, serve to reassure the public that we were getting the latest and best medical advice on how to keep our families and ourselves safe in that challenging and fearful moment. I am surprised that in the aftermath of a global pandemic, that we would want to weaken our public health requirements. It seems like we are going backwards, back to the bad old days before the adoption of the county charter. Let's go back to 2006, when the county charter was drafted and debated by this legislature. Many leading legislators at the time pushed to modernize our health department, then led by Dean Palin, by inserting a provision in the county charter requiring that a licensed physician run the health department. Then legislator Tracy Bartels stated the following, and I quote, "Establishing a physician as the head of the health department is a progressive move. There are changing issues in the field of public health that a medical doctor would best be suited to address," end quote. If that was true in 2006, it is certainly more true today after all we have been through a pandemic. It seems improbable that we could not locate, interview, and hire a physician in the Mid-Hudson Valley area that would be willing to serve as our County Commissioner of Health. I would point out that our former county executive, Mike Hine, led the way in hiring not one, but two commissioners of health who were both licensed physicians. Dr. Lamar Hasbrook was recruited from the CDC. Mike Hine brought him to Ulster County. After Dr. Hasbrook moved on, he then hired, then Executive Hine hired Dr. Carol Smith, again, another licensed physician who has served our county very well over the last 10 or 12 years. I would point out that if this proposal is adopted, Ulster County would be one of the largest counties in New York State without a licensed physician running its health department. Only Saratoga, Niagara, and Broome counties would be above us in population, and some of those counties have at least a director of public health who has a PhD and a master's in public health. Let's not forget that the voters of Ulster County approved the county charter in no small part because of the charter's promise of accountability. Having a licensed professional, whether it's a physician or an attorney or an engineer, in charge of a county department provides additional safeguards to the taxpayers. These individuals are licensed professionals and are thus held to a higher standard. Regarding accountability, I want to quote from an article in the British Medical Journal, which is remarkably on point. The article is about the importance of the public health field being led by doctors. I will quote, "This framework provides protection for the local population and gives a basis for redress if there is inadequate practice. Its credibility comes from the established framework of professional regulation rather than from a corporate and often transient public sector. It is this professional accountability that equips public health doctors to be the leading advocates for public health to their local population." End quote. A licensed physician has taken an oath to prioritize the health and well-being of their patients. They are committed to putting the needs of others before their own, and this sense of responsibility and compassion is essential for a health commissioner. It can be difficult to find a primary care physician in Ulster County. In many ways, the Commissioner of Health is the de facto primary care physician for all of our constituents. Whether it's warning us of severe temperatures in the summer or frigid temperatures in the winter, the words of a health commissioner who is a licensed physician have so much more credibility. When the health commissioner who is an MD issues an announcement in the summer that we're going to have 100, 102 degree weather, our seniors, our children, those who are vulnerable should seek air conditioning, seek cooling centers, our residents listen. And this is not just semantics. This can literally be a matter of life and death. I have heard that some
legislator, you're out of time. Is there somebody who would give you? Thank you, Minority Leader Roberts.
I've heard that some legislators comment that not every doctor is a good administrator. I agree with that. And not every district attorney is a good administrator either. But no one seriously proposes that we should remove the requirement that the district attorney must be licensed to practice law. The district attorney and the health commissioner, they must have the requisite background, training, and education in their respective fields so as to carry out their very public functions. We in Ulster County have taken the lead in so many issues, such as the environment. We should not be going backwards in weakening our own public health requirements unless we have determined after a diligent search that we are absolutely unable to locate a licensed physician. Let's move Ulster County forward, not backward. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Legislator Nolan for the first time.
As a licensed physician and somebody who's done public health training at the master's level and taught master's level courses in public health, I don't think that my opinion on this has been so overwhelmingly persuasive. Because I've said that it is the individual, it is the person who comes to that position rather than the credential, which is really the important criteria here. There are doctors who make excellent directors of public health, but there are also non-physicians who make excellent directors of public health and can speak to the public in extremely convincing ways. So this resolution narrows our ability to find the best person. The person who is the public health commissioner does not serve as the primary health physician for anybody. That there's not a door that is open, and that the public health commissioner does not generally treat any patient. Very different than a district attorney, where the district attorney is a lawyer and brings cases. So it's not an apt analogy. What we do need is somebody who really knows our county, who knows how to organize our services, who works well with people, both the other staff and the people of the county. And serves as a leader on public health issues that are directed at the population as a whole. That's very different than being a clinician and having people come in to be treated one-on-one. I appreciate the effort, and there are medical societies that want to keep physicians in roles and not let other people in. But I have seen how much good was done for obstetric care when midwives were recognized and let in to deal with labor and pregnancy, and that physician's assistants and nurse practitioners. They're just a better way to conceive the roles that these individuals are playing. And I think it's time for us to recognize that. This was what the Charter Commission recommended. And I think that we will find that if there are two qualified individuals and one is a physician and willing to serve in this role at what we can afford to pay, that I think there would be an inclination to hire the physician for whatever additional prestige might come from that. But I would hope that we would never hire a physician when we have somebody with public health training who could do the job better. We need to hire the best person for the position.
Thank you. Legislator Collins for the first time.
So just to be clear, what this proposed resolution does is it allows us to either do hire an MD as a commissioner of health or hire someone who is either a master's in public health or PhD in public health as a director of public health. If the director of public health is hired, we also hire a medical examiner with an MD to work alongside with that person. Whichever path we take as a county, the state has to approve the individuals that are hired. So there is a vetting process. It's not like we're going to just go off the street and hire someone off the street. They have to be vetted by the New York State Commission of Health. I am very certain that the New York State Commission of Health will make sure that we hire the right person. I'm also very certain that our executive team will hire the correct person. I know that they've been doing interviews. They've been getting applications. My understanding is that only one of those applications is from an MD. And that application is from and that particular application is from someone who just recently received an MD. So I would rather have someone who's been in this job, who's done a public health at some other public health commission at some other county, which some of those applications are from, people had already done this. I think we're better served by having a broader place to look. Thank you.
Thank you. Legislator Maloney and then Majority Leader Uchitel.
You know, this is policy, and that's what was a little disappointing about this for me was, on one hand, we're being told there's a good chance we're not going to be able to find a doctor for this position. But they said that before they even went out and started to try to interview. We're told they had no time. Wouldn't you have tried to go out and interview before and then come to us? And if that was the way it went down, if we cast a wide net, we interviewed, they weren't happy with the applicants, then they came to us looking for a policy change, a charter change, it would have been a much different conversation. But surely we should try first. There was also mention a month or two in a meeting that they plan on hiring a part-time doctor. Now it might be something to do with the medical examiner because there's still quite a bit of documentation that has to be signed off by an actual MD. So we're going to hire we can find a good part-time doctor or medical examiner, but we can't find a good doctor for the position, but we never even tried, and we just came out of nowhere with this to the legislature. We have, as my colleague mentioned, just come out of a global pandemic. Just tonight we're talking about creating a child mental health department, basically. Wouldn't it be nice to have a doctor on staff to oversee that? As we talk about child mental health and doing things we've never done and offering services we've never offered, we're going to do away with our doctor position. That doesn't make a hell of a lot of sense. There's a late resolution for a $4.2 million resolution with the jail where we have a state-of-the-art medical facility where we outsource quite a bit. There's a lot of people in jail that think we should be performing more things in-house. It would help with overtime. We wouldn't be sending as many people out. We have the facility to do it. Be nice to have a doctor to consult on that. All we do in this $400 million budget, we've now knee-jerk decided to just get rid of our doctor right after a global pandemic, no less, as Mr. Kovacs has mentioned. I don't understand it. Something feels weird to me. I don't get it. And I certainly don't appreciate the executive and day-to-day operations becoming the policymaker and not really discussing it with us.
Majority Leader, you should tell.
Thank you. I just want to correct the record that this did not come out of nowhere. This was actually part of the charter revisions that were recommended by the Charter Commission. They reviewed it. They did due diligence. They heard from input. This was included in the package that they presented to us that we failed to pass for completely unrelated reasons in our just one of our December sessions last term, which it didn't come out of nowhere. The urgency came out of nowhere, which is when Dr. Smith resigned retired. I do want to – so this did not come out of nowhere. That's just not true. I do want to also just take a different perspective on the reaction that we should have to a global pandemic in the context of this decision. We found in the global pandemic that individual physicians were looking to larger research organizations, looking to guidance from the federal government, from the CDC, on what the actual medical advice was. And the decisions that had to be made locally were logistical decisions about putting nurses in specific places, about getting the right PPE in specific places, about getting people vaccinated, about getting people tested. These were logistical challenges, and I have not heard tonight one example of how a medical degree and a medical license helps you solve those logistical challenges. To be clear, this change does not remove doctors from the Health Commission leadership position. It just means that the health department can be led by a qualified individual and also have a physician in a position that is making decisions that actually need to be made by a physician. We've also heard examples of the perception that a physician has a lot of weight. But we've heard from a physician tonight who said that they're not supporting this, and we don't seem to be giving that much weight. And that's why we need to approve this.
Thank you. A long roll has been requested.
On Resolution 237, Clinton.
Yes.
Collins.
Yes.
Corcoran.
No.
Criswell.
Yes.
Donaldson.
Yes.
Gavaris.
Yes.
Green.
Yes.
Hansett.
No.
Harmon.
Yes.
Hewitt.
Yes.
Kovacs.
No.
Levine.
Yes.
Litz.
No.
Lopez.
No.
Maloney.
No.
McCullough.
Yes.
Nolan.
Yes.
Roberts.
No.
Sperry.
Yes.
Stewart.
Yes.
Uchitel.
Yes.
And Waltz.
No.
The resolution is adopted 14-8. The next resolution is, as the chair said, out of order, 188. Adopting a policy that being a licensed physician with experience in public health shall be a preferred criteria in the legislative confirmation of the appointment of the head of the Ulster County Department of Health.
On the resolution?
On the resolution, we are a short no.
Short yes.
I'm a yes.
Thank you.
Though it's
sorry about that.
188 is defeated 8-14. The next resolution is a bond resolution 243, authorizing the issuance of an additional $509,000 bonds of the County of Ulster, New York, to pay part of the cost of the replacement of the Hurley Mountain Road Bridge in the town of Marbletown in and for said county. Clinton.
Yes.
Collins.
Yes.
Corcoran.
Yes.
Criswell.
Yes.
Donaldson.
Yes.
Guevaras.
Yes.
Green.
Yes.
Hansett.
Yes.
Harmon.
Yes.
Hewitt.
Yes.
Kovacs. Levine.
Yes.
Litz.
Abstain.
Lopez.
Yes.
Maloney.
Yes.
McCullough.
Yes.
Nolan.
Yes.
Roberts.
Yes.
Sperry.
Yes.
Stewart.
Yes.
Uchitel.
Yes.
And Walls.
Yes.
The resolution is adopted 21-0 with one abstention, Legislator Litz. Resolution 245 is our second bond resolution authorizing the issuance of an additional $40,386 bonds of the County of Ulster, New York, to pay part of the cost of the replacement of the Beaver Kill Road Scudderbrook Bridge in the town of Hardinburg and in for said county. Clinton.
Yes.
Collins.
Yes.
Corcoran.
Yes.
Criswell.
Yes.
Donaldson.
Yes.
Guevaras.
Yes.
Green.
Yes.
Hansett.
Yes.
Harmon.
Yes.
Hewitt.
Yes.
Kovacs.
Yes.
Levine.
Yes.
Litz.
Yes.
Lopez.
Yes.
Maloney.
Yes.
McCullough.
Yes.
Nolan.
Yes.
Roberts.
Yes.
Sperry.
Yes.
Stewart.
Yes.
Uchitel.
Yes.
And Walls.
Yes.
The resolution is adopted 22-0. The next resolution is 252, establishing and reporting the standard workday for our elected and appointed officials.
On the resolution.
I'd like to motion that we amend as presented.
And a second?
Second.
And all in favor of the amended?
We're short yes.
Short yes.
Thank you. And on the resolution as amended?
We're short yes.
Short yes.
Yes.
The resolution is adopted as amended 22-0. Two 260 was moved to consent, so that brings us to the last resolution in non-consent, which is 261, approving the execution of a contract for $4,231,589.12 entered into by the county, Prime Care Medical of New York, etc., Ulster County Sheriff.
Legislator Hewitt.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to start by mentioning that Dr. Buckley recognized how much we value education, and I want to recognize how much we also support law enforcement in this county. Resolution 220 with the Wellness Unit and Resolution 261 are testaments to this support. I think Ulster County suffered a major blow to democracy recently at SUNY New Paltz on the dark night of May 2nd. Police forces from New Paltz Police, SUNY Police, New York State Troopers, and the Ulster County Sheriff Department showed up in riot gear, batons, and a penchant for escalation and intimidation to address a peaceful crowd of students and supportive demonstrators. While I appreciated reading SUNY New Paltz President Darrell Wheeler's statement of regret at calling the police and the resulting overreaction to the situation, he should not have called the police that night. The university should have continued working with the students and their reasonable requests, disclosure and divestment. As the deputy chair of the county's Law Enforcement and Public Safety Committee, I am deeply disturbed by the incident and the 132 arrests, the second largest arrest of student demonstrators in our nation. This injustice was not only perpetrated on the 132 people arrested, but all residents of Ulster County, and all charges should be dropped, except for one. This is in stark contrast to the way Vassar President Elizabeth Bradley handled the peace encampment at that college when she said, "We will work to improve our understanding, dialogue about, and educational programming concerning peace and conflict." She also recognized that the students are seeking peace for humanity. Dr. Wheeler jeopardized our community's ability to express itself and relied on our regional police departments to handle a situation that could have been de-escalated without the use of brutal force. I applaud the SUNY New Paltz faculty for coming together to demand answers to what happened on campus that night. The national ceasefire movement is only the tip of the iceberg. Young people are fed up with business as usual, and the leaders of our businesses, institutions, and government agencies would greatly benefit from listening to some simple demands: disclose and divest. Young people with questions and older concerned citizens like me simply want to know simply want to know the investments and major contracts of giant institutions like universities so we can understand what their money is doing to our Earth and our society.
Point of order, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, I'm gonna allow this for one more minute, and then we're gonna move on, because you've diverged quite far from the actual resolution. I'm gonna give him one more minute on this. And
is
then,
it possible we can try to stay on topic here? Related to the resolution?
Yes, that's what I just asked for. So.
Chair, will other legislators have the chance to respond to this then if you're letting him go?
Joe, Legislator Maloney, you haven't been recognized. Please continue, Legislator Hewitt. You have one more
sure.
minute.
I think it's important to invest in the health care of our jail and also the mental wellness of all of our law enforcement officers. After 7 years of elected service in Ulster County, I've come to understand the power of purchasing, which is what we're doing with Resolution 261. I've noticed that it's business as usual that perpetuates the dark edges of our society, those things we wish weren't there but continue to plague us. War, famine, environmental degradation, the deterioration of Main Street businesses, inflation, and the perpetual struggle to make ends meet can all be addressed by the way we purchase things, like health care for our jail in Resolution 261. The typical procurement department and most government...
I'm going to ask you to wrap up because you have gone far, far afield here.
But I think we're talking about health care.
We're talking about this
and
very specific
purchasing?
Resolution.
Are we talking about procurement?
Sir, I've given you the opportunity to speak, and I think that we're at the end of that now.
But I didn't run out of my time, and I believe some of my colleagues would lend me their time. Would you like to shut me down?
Sir, this is not about shutting you down. It's keeping you on track with this resolution. This
resolution 261 resolution. About health care at the jail?
Correct.
Right. The health care we support for our law enforcement officers, the mental health for wellness unit, $250,000.
If you could talk to that subject, please.
The $250,000 we're setting aside for wellness for our law enforcement officers who showed up at SUNY New Paltz last week to see things that they shouldn't be seeing, like dragging students into the shadows and putting an 80-year-old man in the hospital. If major institutions like SUNY New Paltz disclose their books, the parents who are paying for that tuition could know what the money is actually supporting. They could also decide not to send their children to that school because they don't want their money supporting certain things. But we support health care at the jail. With modern ways of doing business, like participatory budgeting, we could build an economy that takes our local preferences into account. Young people in college are passionate and ready to change the world. Let's let them do it. Let's change the way we do business. Let's find peace through procurement.
Thank you very much, Legislator. Appreciate your comments. If there are further comments, I really want to stick to this resolution, to this resolution. Legislator Maloney, you're going to stick to this resolution?
So you allow...
I'm going to ask you, are you going to stick to this resolution?
You allow... I do have a comment on this resolution.
Okay, please make the comment on this resolution.
You know, Chair, I'd ask you to treat everybody equally.
I've treated everybody equally.
No, you didn't. Your reaction to me is far different than your reaction to
Legislator Maloney,
Mr. Hewitt.
You're out of order. Please,
this is an example of it right
I'm
here.
I'm asking you for your comments on this resolution. Please proceed.
What you just allowed to happen is unacceptable.
Please proceed, sir.
And not equity. I was going to ask to pull 220 out. I'll tie it into this. As my colleague mentioned, they're similar. 220 is the mental health. I'd just like to point out that our officers and our COs deserve, especially the COs, deserve far more pay, and we need to hire more people. We need to raise the pay, and a lot of what is driving the need for mental health to be provided to our officers is the lack of being home with their families. And we have a contract coming up, and I really hope we match up with what Orange County's doing. We hire some more officers, we keep our officers, and we improve mental health by having these officers be home with their families.
Thank you for your comments. On the resolution, Minority Leader Roberts.
Thank you again, Mr. Chairman. I hope I'm not out of line, but with 133 arrests at New Paltz, it only goes to show we need mental health services in the southern part of the county.
Thank you for your comments. On the resolution.
We're short, yes. Yes.
I believe we're short, yes.
Thank you.
The resolution is adopted 22-0.
We're going to take a moment here. Okay. So, Legislator Maloney, you requested some reconsiderations. What I'm going to allow is I'm going to allow you to reconsider your vote on 220, 220, 241, 251, and 253, and to speak on any of those four resolutions if you choose. You're welcome.
Thank you. 241, it was the rail. I just hope, you know, there's just an article. I'll be a yes on it. But the whole idea of bringing this back, at least, I mean, it was MANA really that had been talking about it for years, was to give the rails a little more representation. And it already feels like it's going to be hijacked. It's going to be another version of the trail. You know, there was an article in the Wire with some pretty negative comments from a couple of my colleagues that don't even understand that the grant they just got is a good thing, and it's for private property, not the leased property with the county. We don't have a problem giving grants to billion-dollar developers on property we don't own any longer, but it's just an example of the constant, negativity that this county, and there's reasons and relationships that go back years, but it just seems like we never really want to get behind the Catskill Mountain Railroad and rails in this county, and had they been more upfront about what they were going for, I'm pretty sure we would have probably tried to contact the state and stop them from getting it. But I think legislators that get put on this committee, I really hope, are not the same legislators that seem to be out to get the rails all the time. But I will be a yes on that. As far as 251, I will be a no. That's 701 Grand Avenue. I'm happy, very happy to get it back onto the tax rolls. Very happy that they're going to be paying taxes, but I'm disappointed that there's no accountability, there's no investigation, just another disgusting moment in our county's history that we're never going to hold anyone accountable on, never look into, but how a fully functioning property was allowed to not pay their taxes for 10 or 11 years, rack up $11 million in back taxes, be fully functioning, as I've said, and I believe we don't even call in the county attorney and ask him in a single meeting. It was the county attorney, ultimately, that has the job to either foreclose or not. And we didn't for some reason. Don't we want to know why? I have a document in my hand when I was first elected a couple of terms ago, the first question I asked when I came back was, do we have any other properties like Tech City, like Ginsburg, where we've allowed them to function and make money and not go after the property at the three-year mark? And the clerk of the legislature helped me. I had to keep asking. Mr. Goldnick, we all remember him. Eventually, I got a list that was doctored. There's just one property that's on this list that doesn't match the font of everything else. Mr. Goldnick went into the computer system a day or two before I got this document and did something. Obviously, this is what he added. It doesn't match what the controller had years ago. The property was hidden. We hid this property. And nobody wants to go and look into that. Nobody even wants to. The legislature, how simple would it be to call the county attorney in and say, why didn't we foreclose? What is your answer to this? Who told you not to? It's $11 million. And nobody cares about $11 million. We could slander Randall Leverett, but we can't look into $11 million.
Point of order, what does that have to do with anything?
It doesn't. Could you please?
She can speak out anytime she likes, but I can't.
Legislator Maloney?
Now to 253. I'll be a
I
will be a yes, but a frustrated yes at the way this county continues to cover up corruption, abuse of power, and lack of transparency. 253, the last thing. I'll take us all back a couple of years ago when we gave a former colleague, agreed to give a former colleague $600,000 for a heating system that he for years had gone before zoning and planning boards and talked about paying for himself. But we need housing. We want to take credit for housing. Months after agreeing to give $600,000 ARPA funds to our former colleague became the deciding vote to give us a raise. Fast forward, we're breaking ground.
We have a silly picture here on the front page of the paper, and people, please know how the rest of the community looks when we show up in suits and put on hard hats backwards and pretend to throw dirt. It's the silliest thing, and I wish we'd stop doing it. By the way, there's people losing limbs from bug bites in hotels that we're paying $3,000 a month for, and we have executive and their staff and my colleagues with gold shovels and hard hats on with their suits. It's ridiculous.
Is this on topic?
So fast forward, yes, because this was the groundbreaking kind of Silver Gardens. Remember my former colleague that I talked about? We're giving him $600,000, and then we're putting him on the Salary Review Commission to recommend raises for elected officials. I will read from our charter. No member of the Periodic Compensation Review Committee shall hold an elected or appointed position in Ulster County or be compensated in whole or in part from county funds at the time of his or her appointment and during his or her term of membership. Can I get some legal advice on whether that violates the charter? The fact that we haven't even issued the funds we've agreed to, the $600,000 will go, I think, to RUBCO, and then RUBCO will give this individual $600,000. To me, that's a financial relationship, and I think we might want to consider appointing him to the committee. Does anybody even care about how that looks to our constituents? We give the man, a great businessman, and I don't blame him for going for it. This is on us. We give him $600,000, and then we put him on the commission and say, do we deserve a raise? And by the way, it happened a year or two ago. He was the deciding vote. Two individuals said the legislature doesn't deserve raises. Deciding vote.
Thank you for your comments. We are now going to move on to
requested,
public
I
comment.
I requested our attorneys to opine on whether we're violating the charter with this vote.
We're not going to do that right now. Thank you.
You won't grant a request through the chair to an attorney.
Not for that, correct. So we're going to move on to public comment on matters not currently before the legislature. I just want to remind everybody that you have 2 minutes to speak, and this period is on issues not before the legislature tonight. We encourage you to speak, and we ask that everyone keep their comments respectful. Is there anybody signed up for this public comment period?
There is not.
Is there anybody here who would like to speak on issues not before the legislature tonight? Is there anybody who would like to speak? Anybody who would like to speak? Okay. Seeing none, we're going to move on. Thank you. I'd like to call on Legislator Lopez. Could we move the podium again? Sorry about that. Do we need it for? Oh, yes. Thank you. Thank you very much. So I'm going to call on Legislator Lopez to read the names of community members who have recently passed. Thank you for doing that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Tonight's meeting will be adjourned in the memory of the following: Philip D'Orazio, Marlborough, Charles D'Oro, Milton, James Allen Perini, Walkhill, John Wesley Lee III, Walkhill, Raymond Haminian, Ellenville, Deborah N., Angelino Socrates, Peter Rusk, Marlborough, Tobias Hogg, Venice Boyer, Gustav Hansen, Modena, Elaine Lawrence, Kingston, William Armand Sr., Kingston, John Ward, Lockwood, Ellenville, and Nicholas Morris, Kingston.
Thank you. Does anybody else have, yes, Deputy Majority Leader Levine.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to add the name of Pamela Murphy of Saugerties. Pamela was a longtime secretary to the superintendent of schools in the Saugerties Central School District, and she retired just a few years ago. And so I just wanted to add her name in remembrance of her life, and may her memory be a blessing to all that knew her. Thank you.
Thank you. Minority Leader Roberts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to add the name of Rosemary Martin of Modena.
Thank you. I'd now like to call on Legislator Jeff Collins to offer some closing words for this evening.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair Criswell. Since 1949, Mental Health Awareness Month has been observed in May. The theme for this year's Mental Health Awareness Month is Where to Start. As we all know, Ulster County has made a significant start in mental health issues. Among all of the initiatives and programs described earlier in this session, just last month, this body unanimously approved a renewal of the funding for mental health programming in our schools. In our February session, we allocated $2.5 million to the Crisis Stabilization Center renovation project. We have clearly made a great start. Our challenge now is to build on that start. One way to do this is to understand that some of the underlying stressors that affect mental health. Two of the most significant of these stressors in our county are homelessness and substance use disorder. Homelessness deprives people of the most basic needs, shelter. Lack of shelter creates a constant worry about a person's security and survival. The effort to constantly seek shelter and safety is a breeding ground for psychological distress. We know that people experiencing homelessness are more likely to suffer from mental illness and substance use disorder. Substance use disorder wreaks havoc on both physical and mental health. Those suffering from substance use disorder are trapped in a cycle of self-destruction, causing profound changes in brain, chemistry, and behavior. The pursuit of the next fix consumes every thought and action and can lead to depression, anxiety, and psychosis. As elected officials, we have to address these and other root causes of mental health issues. In 2024, Ulster County spent over $10 million on emergency housing to place our unhoused into hotels and motels. While this is an appropriate short-term solution, it is not a long-term solution. We need to create hundreds of units of additional supportive housing. This will not come without a significant financial investment. However, I am certain that this investment in supportive housing will be made by this committee and will pay for itself over time. We must continue to invest in and increase our efforts to address our county's opioid epidemic. As we have seen in today's session, we have some differences among us in how to approach solving this problem. However, I'm confident that we all understand the seriousness of this problem and are committed to solving it. We must take a look at some of the existing programs that are making a difference and look to expand them. The funding for behavioral health services in our schools is a great start, but it only supports 10 students for each school. Why should our middle school staff have to choose which students are eligible for this and which students will not receive this service? I know that every member of this body, all 23 of us, regardless of political party or affiliation, believes and wants to work to address our county's mental health issues. I know that by working together, we'll be able to make a difference and can make a difference, and I appreciate all of the work that you guys have done and all the efforts that you put in place already for this. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for those words. I appreciate it. The next regular meeting of the Ulster County Legislature will be held on Tuesday, June 18th, 2024 at 7 p.m. in the Legislative Chambers, 6th floor, Ulster County Office Building, 244 Fair Street, Kingston, New York. Resolution deadline is Wednesday, May 22nd, 2024. I ask for a motion. Yes, legislators.
Chairman, I will make a motion for adjournment.
And is there a second?
Second.
Legislator Harmon, all in favor?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Have a good evening. Thank you.